Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then Coach Rick Mahorn, Sensation Nasir Khor, and the Detroit Amps look to protect home court against back-to-back MVP Michael Beasley and the defending champs Miami 305. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays on BET. Yay!
Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now together to serve you better, and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics.
The switch has not been fully flipped to vacation mode at Ohio State, but it's getting pretty close. This month of June has gone by in a flash. The recruiting camps are over. The final official visit weekend is
underway.
And the players will even be getting some time off here in maybe like a week and a half or so, as this has all built us up to a mid to late June Freaky Friday mailbag on The Beat, presented by the Waterworks. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. He was here and it was gone.
Here today, gone tomorrow. It's the tale of our lives. The time is our most precious resource.
It is. And we shouldn't waste any of it.
No, let's not.
Because I've got...
People know who we are. They know what we do on this show. We don't need too much lollygag and introductory.
I don't know. Most people.
Most probably. People who are watching on this Friday morning at 5 a.m. are familiar with who the heck they're listening to. Let's get to questions. It's Freaky Friday mailbag time. Get your questions in for next week. TheAustinAndBermShow@gmail.com.
Yeah, because I will be switching the flip.
We're recording next Friday's like Tuesday. So
it's going to be super early.
So please get your questions into TheAustinAndBermShow@gmail.com. And here we go.
Yeah, can't wait for that. And also, by the way, kudos to Tim Hinton and really everybody at Ohio State for running these camps as efficiently and smoothly as they do. We talked about it a few months ago with Pro Day, how people come in and they see this. You guys have it figured out at Ohio State. And it really feels like they do, but that extends to these camps, the 7-on-7s, detailed plans for official visits, all of it. It takes an army to get it all done, and they really have everyone marching in line.
They are as professional an outfit as it gets. We were talking to Paris Campbell about that this week, who was around the program, and you know, he was talking about how different it was from when he was a player at Ohio State, and it was a college program, and not anymore. Everything they do is so streamlined and so efficient.
Yeah. Well, maybe they can bring Paris Campbell in the future and make that even more professionalized. There will be a conversation with the former Ohio State wide receiver coming to The Beat very shortly. But all right, Burn wants us to get into it. I have five questions up here right here, I think. We'll start with Steven. Said, you guys often talk about when players transfer from Ohio State, they are guys Ohio State could have kept if they really wanted to. Who is the last guy that transferred that Ohio State really tried their best to keep, but the player ended up transferring anyway?
It's an interesting question. Not a lot of guys come to mind because, as the question says, in most cases, especially now in the NIL era, if Ohio State really wants to retain someone, if a guy's leaving because he wants money, which is generally the reason that we saw so many departures from last year's end of the season to now, the one guy that is sticking to me is Hiro Kanu.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like that's one that kind of caught them off guard at Ohio State when he transferred before the 2025 season, coming off the national championship, thinking like he had waited his turn. He'd been in the program 3 years, was finally ready to emerge as a regular guy in the rotation at defensive tackle, and then he was at Texas.
And I think, you know, you and I both talked to Hiro a ton. He was one of my favorite players on that roster to talk to. Soccer, football, the world, anything.
Schnitzel.
I didn't think in his heart of hearts, again, and I don't know everything that goes into their decisions or everything about their lives, wouldn't even pretend to, that he had any interest in leaving Ohio State, which there was that, you know, hullabaloo by mid-spring last year where it's like he was already back. He was spending his spring break. He left Austin to come back to Columbus because all of his friends were here, and he had a great relationship with Larry Johnson, his basically every defensive lineman at Ohio State does. It felt very much like a situation where Ohio State hadn't fully understood or was willing to go down the exploratory path of student visas and workarounds and
green card or like green cards, how these kids who are from other countries get paid for NIL, all that stuff.
Because it didn't also seem like that was ever like a a primary driving motivator for Hiro Kanu. He wanted to be in Columbus. He wanted to be in America. He wanted to be playing football. He was hoping to get to the NFL level. Thought that, you know, he was willing to make some of those sacrifices up front. And maybe there comes a time where it's like, if somebody says to you, we've figured it out for an international player, and this is the amount. And I think that maybe both of those things were true. The amount was more than Ohio State was willing to invest in that particular position. Probably in the long run, they may have regretted that in some respects based on how many snaps Cade McDonald had to play a year ago.
And based on how many of last year's freshman defensive tackles also left after the season.
Yeah. And you know, maybe just not, I know that this gets tiresome for people, but, you know, wanting to walk into a gray area or past a line that was drawn in the sand to figure out how best to do that with somebody coming over from Germany. So that's, none of that is to, you know, play hindsight, you know, Monday morning quarterback or Freaky Friday quarterback, that thing in hindsight. But I think he's got to be the only one that truly resonates in my mind as a shock. And the only other person that I even put in that conversation is Jameson Williams, but it wasn't a scenario where the Buckeyes could fight tooth and nail to try and keep him because he was surplus to requirement for the room that they had.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have transferred out who still come back and regularly socialize and spend their time in the off season or spring break in Columbus. I mean, the only other
the San Diego of the Midwest.
Yeah, one of the other more recent players that left, and I just the timing of it, the Glenville of it was Bryce West. That was a surprise to me considering the buzz he was getting. But as we saw at the end of last year, when Leroy Roker started being the guy that was being put into the situational needs at that slot, corner, nickel, safety, whatever we were going to call it, it seemed like maybe that there was more to that than we thought. But again, Glenville and the relationships there made that a surprise to me. But Hiro is the only one that really pops up to me recently.
Yeah, and I think even if you look at it right now, and you're talking about Bryce West and Aaron Scott, like, this secondary is still a fully loaded.
Yeah.
It's, you can see why maybe that wouldn't have made much sense for the salary cap allotment based on what Ohio State knew it had coming back and who else might have interest in taking their spots.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, we've spent a lot of this time in those last few months talking about the Jay Timmons types, the Earl Littles, the Terry Moores. These are guys that are coming in, and the money that was going to have to be allocated to Aaron Scott or Bryce West is being put to use in a different way in the secondary. And I think that if people had to ask themselves, do you want the 1 year that you might get out of Bryce West at this amount or the likely three that you're going to get at Jay Timmons? I'm going to tell you, when it's all said and done, people are going to be glad it was Jay Timmons.
I think you might be right about that. Thank you, Stephen, for that. This came in from Zach. You've said on the show that you think James Laurinaitis is going to be the next head coach in Ohio State. What do you think his coaching trajectory will look like between now and then? How many years until he gets promoted to defensive coordinator? Does he leave Ohio State and come back? And how many years from now until you think he will actually become the head coach? I think it's a fascinating narrative to consider who becomes the next defensive coordinator after Matt Patricia. Tim Walton and Matt Guerrieri were mentioned last time around. Laurinaitis is obviously Ohio State through and through, and Ryan Day has also shown he loves dipping into the NFL coaching pool to get coordinators. I think multiple things can be true here. James Laurinaitis doesn't have to be a defensive coordinator to become the Ohio State head coach, and he doesn't have to leave to become the next Ohio State coach.
He doesn't have to leave to be Ohio State's next defensive coordinator or anything else.
And I kind of think that he would be in line to take over. And let's just say a lot of this is based around, I think, Ryan Day's family more than anything else.
And Matt Patricia's family. Because when you're talking about when do you see him as the potential defensive coordinator?
I actually don't see him becoming the next defensive
coordinator. I think that there is that opportunity if it's 3 years from now. Matt Patricia signed a 3-year contract. Yeah. If that happens and he fulfills that, there's a reason James Laurinaitis and Matt Patricia are working so closely together now. And it's because James, from my understanding, sees that he is going to learn how to be a defensive coordinator from Matt Patricia, but not just a defensive coordinator, a CEO type head coach eventually as well.
Yeah. So I guess maybe this will sound like a hot take. I don't mean it that way. And maybe they won't be able to keep Matt Guerrieri for 3 years,
right?
Because he kind of flies under the radar, weirdly, on the Ohio State staff.
Because he didn't play football at Ohio State.
But he also, he understands Ohio State football quite well in the state of Ohio. That's getting sidetracked. He is incredibly well thought of in the coaching profession. Still on the ascent in a lot of ways, but he's had play calling experience before. He's had opportunities to be a defensive coordinator. He's now worked in multiple coaching trees, including Jim Knowles and now Matt Patricia.
Yeah.
You know, and elsewhere, but maybe that would be the spot where you could get to a co-defensive coordinator position for James Laurinaitis, but I don't believe it's necessary. And, you know, I think back to the transition from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day specifically, and Ryan Day had not been the one and only de facto coordinator.
Correct.
Basically, because Kevin Wilson was there, you know, and thinking back to that time when you and I were saying, well, what is the next step going to be? I know you had, you know, a hunch that Ryan Day could be a head coach at some point. But at that time, given the immediacy and how shortly, you know, Ryan Day had been at Ohio State.
Was like, and well, kind of the emergency nature of him.
Kevin being, Wilson or Greg Schiano, you have a ready-made solution right there. And if that doesn't work out, you could do that with Larry Johnson. That was those were the three that we discussed. And they went with Ryan Day. And it was because you saw all of those other traits that you wanted in the head coach and the CEO, and he didn't have to be a coordinator for you to understand that. I think James Laurinaitis is in that exact same position. So no, I don't think he'll have to leave. And I also don't think he'll have to be the quote unquote de facto head coach of the defense.
I don't think he has to do either of those things either. I think he will end up being the defensive coordinator of this program. But to your first point, a lot of that depends on Ryan Day and his family. If Ohio State wins another national championship in the next 2 years and Ryan Day has an opportunity at 49 years old to take a step away from football and be able to watch RJ play at Northwestern for a couple of years and not be involved and then turn around and get into TV, which he'll be great at.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that I've ever had that conversation with him, but I could see a scenario where a second or third national championship before his contract expires in 2032 is a, hey, I think I've done enough. I've made enough. I've done enough. I'm young enough where I can still watch my kids, enjoy my kids, go watch RJ play in college. I think that the conversation around when James becomes the next head coach entirely revolves around when Ryan leaves.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because if Ryan plays out his contract to 2032, the conversation about James Laurinaitis at that point in year 6 or 7 as a full-time assistant.
He's not going to wait that long.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
But if it's next year, it's too early for James. So, but, you know, to what you said originally, there's so many requisite skills that James has and things that he does well and the way that he represents the university, the way he sells the university, that he is just such a natural fit for this to me to be the guy eventually, as long as he continues to love what he's doing, and there's no reason to think that he wouldn't. You're seeing him spearhead different movements around Ohio State football, like different logos and the backer. I don't know if you saw on Thursday, he's commissioned this backer hood logo that he's now got.
Patricia was wearing one of his designs.
Right, that he's now got on his stuff. He's working with Homage to create a line of all 97 living Ohio State All-Americans to celebrate them and do the things and bring them back into the program. Like, that is stuff. If you're watching this and you're trying to figure out how do I position myself in my job, in my career, to have somebody give me an opportunity that maybe people will question if I've earned it yet. The way you do that is by doing stuff like James Laurinaitis does, which is saying, I love this place and I am willing to do more for it. And there's nothing about James Laurinaitis that will ever make him be or put him in a position where you look at him and say, well, this guy's just loafing. He's just he's just living off of his last name. He's living off his legacy as a three-time All-American, all this stuff. Like, he loves what he's doing at Ohio State.
Yeah. He has always embraced that part of it, and I don't know that there's anything he's ever done in his life that he's done halfway, even when he was in broadcasting, when he was working at 97.1 The Fan, when he was at Big Ten Network.
We were sitting there on Thursday morning at Ohio State watching this recruiting camp, and James Laurinaitis, unprompted, wants to talk about how he was called upon to be the goaltender in the coaches and in the coaches versus players June Olympics, and how pumped he was to get the call and win the day and win the event for the coaches. And there's just an energy and enthusiasm about what he does that I think is really contagious. And that's why months ago or a year ago now, I said, I do think he's going to be the next head coach at Ohio State. And I have just no reason not to think that when you see a guy commit to something the way he does, and then know what he's actually accomplished, it's hard not to be excited about it. That's what I felt when I watched you commit to Awaken 180. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man,
Austin's, if this guy can do it.
If this guy can do it, and he's really doing it. He's really doing it. And then, you know, it took a couple of years for me to get an opportunity to fix myself and to take care of myself from a physical standpoint. The reality is, it's not just about not eating as much or changing the way that you think about food. What ends up happening is that it changes the way that you think about yourself. I am so much more like confident and happy and feeling good about myself when I am taking care of myself physically. And Awaken 180 helped me figure out how to do that. Go to awaken180weightloss.com and they can do the same for you.
Well, also, it's important to keep in mind that it is not time for an Ohio State coaching change yet.
Correct.
The seasons may change.
Well, they are.
But comfort doesn't. Call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing for maintenance, installation, and repairs. Or visit online at thewaterworks.com. The Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing, they are proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. This came from Aaron to the Freaky Friday mailbag. I feel like we have not seen anything close to Ted Ginn Jr. speed since his last game. We've had really fast players after him, but just seems like his speed and agility were so different. I believe he ran a 10.5 second 100-meter dash in high school. Legend Bay, I believe, ran a 10.23 in high school. And Jameer Brown ran a 10.4 second 100-meter dash. That is the current senior wide receiver recruit. That is blazing.
A new state record.
From their high school tape in Bay's spring camp, how do you think they compare to Ted Ginn Jr.?
Thing that Teddy did, great to see him out at Ohio State.
He was out there on Thursday.
Out there on Thursday watching Jet Harrison. Also, Jameer Brown out there to watch Jet Harrison. Jameer started his official visit at Ohio State on Friday morning. Straight line speed and football speed, and it's such a stupid cliche, but football speed is much different than straight line track speed. You're talking about adding the weight of the uniform, all of the other things. There's never been a player that I've ever seen on the football field, maybe other than Joey Galloway, who is even as close to the top end straight line speed of Ted Ginn. Because what he was so good at was like being efficient with his speed. It wasn't just being fast. It was like getting there and going and staying there. That's where Jameer is going to get better. He's really, really fast. I mean, Jameer Brown is blazing. And I remember when he was a freshman in high school, he was one of these guys around the state. People are talking and like, well, there's a kid down at Wayne that it does it a little different. And he couldn't run routes. He couldn't do any of that stuff now then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we mentioned Paris Campbell. Maybe Paris.
I was going to say, let's not just fast forward him and Curtis Samuel.
Paris might be the only other guy that was really close to what Teddy, when he got the ball and had a green grass in front of him, there was nobody going to catch him.
No.
So to me, I guess Paris is the one since Teddy, and I think Jameer does have the potential to be that type.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far ahead of that with those two players. Like, that's one is in high school, and the other had like two acclimation practices, not full pads, and he looked awesome in them. Like, yeah. We all know that. We've talked about him for a reason, and Legend Bay's tape in high school is phenomenal, but
I was told earlier this week, if Legend was 6'1", he'd be a quarterback still, and that they would just do crazy, crazy things with him.
I'm kind of at the point where...
But his speed's different even. That's start-stop. That's start-stop. That's Teddy was not that
guy. He is an elusive runner. He has speed. He has agility.
Artistic.
It does...
Resemble art.
It does remind me of something that you would see in the Louvre.
Yeah, like a Renoir.
Yeah, it's... but...
Surratt was the dots, right? Because Surratt rhymed with dots. That's what I was always told in art class.
I don't know. I don't remember anything. I never maybe even knew anything about
art. Did you have art classes in Wyoming?
No. Of course not. Why would we?
I don't know.
We were out steering cattle.
Yeah, roping and riding.
I said this in March, you know, and I know that the Austin and Burn policy is no accidents into the microphone from Ryan Day. And I also understand, like, Carlos Lachlan is going to go to bat for his guys in every scenario. But even when it came up a couple of weeks ago, I didn't include Legend Bay as like in our conversation about how the carries are going to be dispersed. I don't know what it's going to look like. It's not that I'm not trying to throw a bucket of cold water on the conversation, and I'm not trying to say that, oh, well, that's finally Ryan Day being hyperbolic with Tyreek Hill and Curtis Samuel comparisons. I just don't know. I understand that in the past, in our conversations, and thinking about 2 years ago at this time, and you're like, well, Jeremiah is going to be the most, he's already the most famous player in college football. And I'm like, come on. But I could see it in camp. Like, that was different. I had more to go off of. And then it was the part in the back of my mind. It's like, all right, well, it's going to take time to develop to the speed of the game, the physicality. Jeremiah is the exception. I think Legend Bay, at least if you're asking me in late June, where I still haven't seen him in pads, we didn't see him in a spring game, we didn't see him on Student Appreciation Day, where it's like, how are you going to project that forward? I don't think it's possible to just say, as even with them still talking about him in June, everyone on the coaching staff still raving about him in June, all that's happening, it's not stopped. But I'm at the point where I just like, until I can actually see it myself, I feel uncomfortable being like, well, he's got to have 10 touches a game.
Yeah. I don't think we can have a legitimate conversation about Legend and his speed comparable to Teddy or Paris until we see him actually in a game.
Yeah. Oh, and, in training camp, that's
different. But even seeing his film, like, you see really super high-end athleticism, but again, it's a lot of start-stop. It's a lot of jitterbug stuff. Jameer is different. Jameer, like, there, catch it, go. Yeah. You see it on film. He plays wide receiver. That's not what Legend did in high school. He's learning a new position now. Running back doesn't always lend itself to really showcasing straight line speed. It's all about wiggle. It's all about, you know, creating space. As I said last week, when we're talking about freshmen and who can play, there's an opportunity for Legend Bay this year in the return game to show things that were Ted Ginn-esque. Because that's really where you saw Teddy's speed in a different way. When everyone's running at him this way, and then he is not
flying
just by them. He is out of the screen before they turn around. That is where I think Legend, that 10-2 that he's run in the 100, that's pretty crazy fast straight line speed.
Sure,
but
is.
We'll see how it looks, I guess. But to the heart of the question, the only guy since Teddy that was even close is Paris.
And thank you for that, Aaron. I really appreciate the thought that you put into that. It was a thinker for us as well. Tom would like to know, you said on a recent show that Ohio State may have 7 tight ends. Do you think this is a good thing or typical? We seem to lose out to guys who transfer away like Joe Royer and Jelani Thurman with the logjam. I don't think the Buckeyes really lost out in either of those scenarios. I loved Joe Royer. He was able to turn himself into an NFL draft pick. Would he have dramatically altered the picture for the Buckeyes a year ago?
Speaking of guys that left and would always come back and hang out.
Joe, yeah, I mean, for sure. Max Clair and Will Kaczmarek were both drafted in the top 3 rounds. So I guess from that vantage point, as Tom is asking,
were they both drafted ahead of Joe Royer?
Yeah, they could have had another one.
Yeah.
Could have had 3 draft picks, but that probably would have made it tougher for one of them to make an impact or impress the scouts enough. But, you know, the Jelani Thurman thing, he had so much opportunity,
mm-hmm.
like almost endless. It's not like he was not getting playing time because of seniority or Ohio State was recruiting over him, around him, going to the transfer portal. All that was because Jelani Thurman wasn't ready. So, and he had multiple years. He had multiple opportunities. I don't want to pile on him because of the one thing that I said over and over and over and over about Jelani Thurman was it was never a question of work ethic. I saw him in the Woody more than almost anybody else over the last few years, not named Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
He always put in the time. And the coaching staff was always taking extra opportunities, whether that was Keenan Bailey when he first arrived or Sean Banks or anybody else after that. Like, there was constant effort being put in by Jelani Thurman and by the Ohio State staff. They didn't lose out an opportunity with Jelani Thurman because of the depth of the room. He wasn't able to functionally contribute to the depth chart that they had.
Right, but the reality is you have to have six or seven guys now at that position because of the transfer portal, because Ohio State uses the tight end in so many different ways. These guys are not just tight ends at this point. They are being used as extra offensive linemen. They're now in the Arthur Smith era. You're going to see more of them used in the H-back role. But because it's such a developmental position, because it takes 3 to 4 years for most of these guys to be able to play, you have to have the backlog, because there are guys who are not going to have the patience to wait till year four to play, and that they're going to leave.
Yeah.
And Joe Royer had obviously personal issues going on, the, you know, family challenges that made it easier for him to go home or more important for him to be in Cincinnati. You look at the seven guys that we talk about at the Ohio State at right now. You have Nate Roberts, who's going to play a lot, but he's going to play a lot of different spots. That fullback role that people hated for him last year is still going to be his role this year. Now, that's why you went out and brought in Hunter Welsing and Mason Williams, because you need to be able to have your tight end one playing other spots, and that's what Nate is going to do. Then you get Bennett Christian back in year five guy, bigger blocker, maybe not someone that we're going to count on often in the passing game. Hope not. I mean, let's call a spade. You have Hunter Welsing and Mason Williams and Nate Roberts. It was frustrating to a lot of people that the biggest play of the Big Ten championship game was thrown to Bennett Christian, of all people. You have Max LeBlanc, who started to turn the corner a little bit, but it's year three for him. It's not like he's even close to being able to really contribute. Then you have Brody Lennon, who is in a similar spot in year two, but he's only been on campus for a year. I talked to him on Thursday for a good 10 minutes. He's like, I had no idea what I was doing when I got here. And then you add in Nick Lauder, who people love, but
yeah,
he's
going to take time.
It's going to take time. So you have those seven guys, but of those seven, you can really only count on four of them to play. And it's a developmental position and one that Ohio State's not really paying for in the NIL era. So you just have to keep stacking them and hope that you find ones that hit. And if it means that a guy like Jelani Thurman, who has a ton of upside, leaves, even though he hasn't realized it, so be it.
Yeah, and to that, I even think back to the first question about Ohio State not losing guys that it wants to keep. Like, it knew what the number was for Jelani Thurman. It was comfortable. It made no real effort to retain him. That's why Jelani Thurman was the first name that was in the transfer portal after the Cotton Bowl.
I mean, 10 minutes after the game ended.
Basically during the fourth quarter at that point. It seemed like it was already saved and ready to go. But again, I don't fault him for that decision. And I don't fault Ohio State for the way it has used the tight end spot and the way it's recruited, developed, used the transfer portal. I don't even view it as a logjam, because if you had put both Joe Royer and Jelani Thurman on that team, yes, there could have been six tight ends that you trusted in game situations, but they still played four throughout the duration of the season. Yeah,
but you wouldn't have had Max Clair if Joe Royer.
No, you wouldn't have. You wouldn't have had him. No.
So it's seven guys, but there's every year there's only going to be four that you can really count on, because the position is going to be recruited and built so differently at Ohio State moving forward than what we would have expected in the non NIL era.
Yeah, 100%. But I appreciate that question as well. We've got more left in the chamber, but if you'd like to send a few fresh ones and allow an opportunity to maybe get a couple mailbags stocked up
Let's get July's mailbags all just chalked full,
bud.
Do we have another one, or are we good?
No, we're good. We have we have to wrap it up here. We're up against our time. I know it feels like we've got limitless, but you know, we really don't
want to. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
With Bradley Cooper?
No.
Limitless?
Uh-uh.
He took a pill. Well, you know, make his brain more functional.
I'm aware of the concept, but I didn't need to see a super smart Bradley Cooper. That was
I like my Bradley Cooper's dumb.
Yeah, dumb it down.
Or super emotion, like in that movie where he was with Lady Gaga. He's like super emotion. Yeah, he was like Eddie Vedder.
Maybe basically. I just only like him when he's a trash panda.
I mean, I liked him in that one movie where he was in Philadelphia doing the. There was a book or something like the Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah,
that was good.
I saw that one.
Yeah, it was good. It's a good movie.
Had a little J-Law in it.
Little J-Law. Yeah. I thought you were going to say J-Lo, and I was like, that's not her name, dude.
Yeah, sorry.
But then J-Lo was not in that movie, so it really made a lot of sense.
We're off the rails and heading into our own vacation mode. Coaches will probably be hitting those planes on Sunday night after they drop off the official visitors. Berm will have his fingers all over the pulse of the recruiting trail. There could still be some decisions coming down the pike over the next couple of weeks. He will have that. covered. We have some interviews that are stocked up, both for basketball and for football. So stick around. We appreciate you. Hope you have a fantastic mid to late June here weekend. Be back on Monday. We'll be talking about some dudes of the week to kick it off, just like we did last week. He's Berm. I'm Austin. This has been The Beat, presented by The Waterworks. We'll have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.